Genetic Engineering and Cloning by Robert C. Newman, Bartholomew J. Botta. Abstract. What is genetic engineering? Where did it come from? And what is it doing? We discuss transgenic plants and animals, what has been accomplished so far, some advantages and concerns. What is cloning? We discuss the history of cloning before and after Dolly the sheep, and its advantages and concerns. How should Christians react to all of this? What are God's commandments in this area? What should we expect to happen in the future, and what should we do? What is genetic engineering? Genetic engineering is a technology for modifying the genetic information in a plant, animal, or human in order to produce some desired trait or characteristic. Brief history of genetic engineering. The name's new. The practice is really not. Plants and animals have been bred for thousands of years, and this is genetic engineering. It's just that the technology has been advanced since then. Human breeding has also been done now and then. All of this has worked by trying to enhance desired characteristics without knowing how they are transmitted. Genetic engineering in the 20th century, there have been great advances in our knowledge of genetics, how genetic information is stored, how it's transmitted, how it's used. We now know something about DNA and how DNA information is copied off onto RNA and then how that's translated to make proteins and such. So we do have some idea of how it's stored and how it's transmitted and how it's used. The entire DNA sequence of several human organisms is now known. And when this talk was put together, the human DNA was just about done. That is now done. We're just beginning to decipher what each unit means and how it works. Prospects for genetic engineering. Well, designing plants and animals from scratch is not going to happen anytime soon. We are certainly not alone far enough to do anything like that. Transgenic engineering, however, is being done already. This is putting genetic information from one type of plant or animal into another. And cloning, making genetic copies of existing plant or animal, that is being done already as well. Let's look at the latter two of these, transgenic engineering and cloning. Transgenic organisms. An organism is called transgenic if it has genetic information added to it from a different type of organism. Viruses do something of the sort when they infect plants, animals, and humans. So this has been going on for a very long time, but not under human control. Humans have begun to do this with plants and animals. We are not yet making flying pigs. Transgenic plants. This is the work that's furthest along. Corn, which has been transgenically engineered to make its own insecticide. Soybeans and cotton that have been transgenically engineered to be resistant to herbicides so that you can spread herbicide on a field and it will kill off the weeds but not kill off the soybeans and cotton which you're trying to raise. Papayas have been transgenically engineered to be resistant to viruses. So this is some of the sort of work that's going on now. Transgenic crops are now being grown in the Americas, North and South, in South Africa, in Europe, Australia, and China. So the use of this is certainly getting around. Transgenic animals. Work is less advanced here. Human genes have been inserted into bacteria and mice. The purpose of this is not to make bacteria that have human traits or mice that have human traits, but rather to have bacteria or mice that produce various human proteins that can be used in treating diseases. How do we make transgenic mice? Well, here's a little diagram that describes a construction of a transgenic mouse. You basically have male and a fertile female, and you collect the fertilized eggs from this fertile female mouse, and then you inject transgene material into the male pronucleus and implant the injected embryos into pseudo-pregnant females, and the live birth then is hopefully got the transgene in it, and you have to test for that. Well, what are some advantages of transgenic engineering? We've hinted that already. Plants that are more disease resistant is what we've seen largely, and the upshot of that then would be larger yields, since the yields are not cut back by the disease. Some other desires and some other advantages of transgenic engineering would be to engineer plants that would be more transportable, so they could get to market from further away or be further between the time they're picked and they're marketed. So more transportable. And another advantage that we'd be aiming for is plants that are more nutritious. There's been some work on trying to add some proteins to rice that would make it more nutritious than it normally is. Animals, so far the major activity has been making proteins for medicinal purposes, but another project that is being worked on is making organs for transplant to humans. Doing some transgenic engineering on, in this case, we have to be animals that are near human size, pigs or something larger than that. Well, what kind of concerns are there about transgenic engineering? There are plenty. It's a very controversial topic. Regarding the plants, are the plants safe to eat? That's obviously a concern if you're talking about edible plants, as most of these are. Will the plants harm wildlife in one way or another? Will the pesticide in the plant harm insects that aren't actually pests of the plant, but which might light on it for one reason or another? Will some of these plants be sufficiently resistant that they themselves will become super pest weeds of some sort? Will these plants that have been transgenically engineered replace or contaminate natural plants? Those are the concerns that have been voiced at this point. Animals, will they be harmful in one way or another? And will they replace or contaminate natural animals? So that's a quick tour of transgenic engineering. We turn next to look at cloning. A clone is a copy of something. The term has been borrowed over from biology and most recently been used a good deal in computer science, where a clone is a computer that mimics an IBM. I guess that is usage is going out now as IBM has got so much less of the market share. In genetics, a clone is a genetic copy of another organism. Clones occur naturally. Plants and lower animals sometimes breed asexually, and so those offspring, if you like, are clones. And in higher animals, identical twins, identical triplets, etc., are also clones. Brief history of cloning. Well, for centuries it's been known that simple animals, worms and starfish, can be cloned by cutting them in half. Usually, I suppose, it's the larger piece, more than half, that will regenerate itself. As you're aware, this does not work for higher animals. Part of the problem here is cell specialization, that the cells start out early on as very general in a plant or animal, but as the plant or animal develops its different parts, the cells specialize by turning off certain DNA information, etc., and so you get nerve cells and bone cells and muscle cells and such. Cloning in the 20th century, we now realize that each specialized cell has all the genetic information, but much of it is turned off. So the problem is how to reset the genetic program, if you like, in the cell so that this genetic information is now turned on again, this genetic information is usable. Well, back in the 1950s, scientists succeeded in cloning frogs, so work has been going on. Starting in the 1970s, it became possible to clone livestock from fetal cells, that is, the cells that would form the fetus of a new cow or sheep or something of that sort could be cloned, and then you could get the livestock made from that.
Mm.
The first cloning of an adult animal was the cloning of Dolly in 1996, the clone from an adult sheep cell by Scots researchers under the leadership of Ian Wilmot. They had only one success in 300 tries, so obviously there are complications here. Dolly grew up to maturity and successfully had a lamb by natural means in 1998. Mm. Dolly seemed to be prematurely old. Here's a chart showing the cloning of Dolly, the cloning of a ewe by the Roslin method. A ewe produces the mammary cell to be cloned. A mammary cell contains copy of all genes needed to produce a sheep, but only genes for proteins required by mammary cells are active. These cells grow and divide, generating precise copies of themselves. Then the cells are deprived of nutrients, inducing them to dormancy. At this stage, all of their genes can be activated. Another ewe, or even the same ewe, now provides the egg. The egg is preserved in a laboratory dish. The nucleus is dislodged from the egg. The mammary cell and the nucleus from the egg blend with a spark of electricity. Molecules in the egg then program genes in the mammary cell to engender the embryo. Clusters of embryonic cells are grown. The embryos are implanted in the surrogate mother. The resulting lamb is a clone of the donor ewe. Cloning since Dolly. Cloning of this sort has now been done on cattle, pigs, and mice as well. The success rate has improved considerably. Cloning humans begins to show up in science fiction back in the 1970s. This is now a realistic possibility, though as far as we know it has not been done yet. Advantages of cloning. With an adult plant or animal, the breeder knows what its traits are. This is not the case with fetal cell cloning, where you know you have these fetus, but because the mixing of genetic material, you don't know how closely the fetus would resemble the parent or the parents. Cloning allows making a genetically identical copy of the desired plant or animal. Concerns regarding cloning. The success rate from adult animal cells is still rather low. This would be unacceptable for cloning humans in most societies. The evidence suggests that the clones which thrive are still not right. We are, after all, doing something we don't have a really good handle on. Trying to reset the program, so to speak, is something that is very iffy, and you're not exactly sure what you're... I mean, you know what you're doing. You're not exactly sure what it's doing inside to the genetic material. So the evidence suggests the clones which survive are still not right. The genetic program has probably not been completely reset. As I said, we still don't understand what we're doing in cloning from adult cells. How should Christians react to all of this? How should we respond to food containing transgenic ingredients, making mice which produce insulin, making pigs to harvest for human organ replacements? What does the Bible have to say about such things? Well, nothing directly. The Bible was not designed to answer all the questions that might arise by various human activities, but the Bible does give us many important principles, so we need to kind of look at those principles and see how they might apply to this whole question. Well, let's look at some of God's commandments. God's commandments back in Eden give us some information about God's purposes. Genesis 1:26, God tells us that mankind was to be in God's image, and humans were to rule over the animals and plants and the rest of created nature, if you like. God's commands in Genesis 1:28 were for humans to be fruitful, to multiply, to fill the earth, to subdue the earth, to rule over the animals, the fish, the birds, etc. So, there are some commands that have been taken by many Christians and Jews perhaps as well to indicate that humans were given the right to engage in technology, but it's obviously not a right that is unconstrained by any other considerations, just as human rule over other humans is not unconstrained by other considerations. God's commands at Mount Ararat after getting off the ark are very similar to those at Eden, to be fruitful, to increase, to fill the earth. But now we're told that the animals will fear mankind, and that the animals are given into your hands. They will be your food, but you must not eat their lifeblood. Many interpreters understood then that humans were vegetarians before this particular time. Don't know that for sure. We don't have absolutely certain information about that, but there are certainly passages that look that way. You must not eat their lifeblood, not explained why that's so, except the remark about the life being in the blood, but that's to be poured out. Neither you, humans, nor they, the animals, may shed human blood. Genesis 9, 1 through 7 is where these passages occur. So there's some more information. There now appears to be some situation of, disruption between animals and humans, and animals will be eaten by humans, killed and eaten by humans, human life is still to remain sacred, though in fact, as we see on further for the narrative, in fact, humans will begin to shed human blood, but they will be breaking God's law at that point. What about the treatment of animals, given into their hands? You know, they are given into your hands, sounds they're subject to you, etc. And yes, there's certainly some sense in which the Bible indicates that so, that already had been so in Eden. But Proverbs 12:10 gives us a little elaboration. A righteous man cares for the needs of his animals, but the kindest acts of the wicked are cruel. Not unpacked for us, but certainly suggests that if a person is righteous, they will treat their animals with kindness. What about God's commands at Sinai? Now, zeroing in more specifically on God's people, here at this point, the Jews, but surely there would be principles here that, unless they're abrogated in some way, would apply to those who become Christians in later centuries. Huh? Well, one is have no other gods but God. God is to be our only one we worship. Make and worship no images. Again, don't know the ins and outs of why God chose that particular thing, but perhaps suggesting that we are not to be making God in our image, but we are to let God be God and try to find out what he's really like. We are not to misuse God's name. It's possible to, try and use religion to our advantage in some way or another, misusing things that God has given us, if you like. We're to remember to keep his Sabbath rest. God is the Lord of our time. And we're to recognize that and realize that situation he's given us on earth, we are his caretakers, if you like. We're not on our own. Honor your parents. Respect for human authority as well. Don't murder, commit adultery, or steal. Again, the sacredness of human life, the sacredness of the sexual relationship, and responsibility to recognize private property. Don't give false testimony, a responsibility to tell the truth and not to try to use the law to bring disaster on our enemies. Don't desire what is not yours. The law about coveting, that we need to recognize that God is the giver and be satisfied with what he provides and not be out always trying to want and have something more we don't have, something that has been rather grievously, rather grievously violated by the advertising industry in the 20th and 21st centuries. Huh? Well, those are the laws. As you can see, they have various aspects regarding greed, regarding truth-dealing, regarding kindness for animals, etc., that suggest that these laws still need to be applied, in the whole area of transgenic engineering and cloning, etc. The respect for humans suggests that one should be very cautious about jumping into some kind of cloning of humans. So there we are. That's basically what we've got, and humans need to think about that. Particularly people who really do take the Bible seriously need to at least personally apply these things to their own lives and try and encourage our governments to act righteously as well. What should we expect in the future? Well, technology is good because creation is. Technology is basically the means of doing things with creation by understanding it better, we might say. However, although technology is good and creation is good, mankind has fallen. The late theologian J. Oliver Buswell says mankind is a ruin, okay, is the figure of speech he uses. What's a ruin? A ruin isn't just a pile of shapeless stones. A ruin is an artifact, but a ruin is not what it was designed to be. It is no longer as functional as it once was. We think of perhaps a piece of architecture lying on the ground, say a column from a Greek temple, and it's a ruin because it's not standing up and being a part of the temple, but it's lying there on the ground and it's no longer being used. So mankind is that way in some way. He has some of the characteristics that he was created with, but is not carrying out some of the functions he was created to carry out. Well, putting these two things together, technology and mankind, man has always used the latest technology for good or for evil. And the answer in history is for both. It is very typical. Huh? This is bound to happen with genetic engineering, too. We should expect it, that we now have a technique to be able to do these things. Humans are going to use genetic engineering for good, and it's also going to be used for evil as well. By God's mercy, there has been less nuclear, chemical, and biological warfare than we had any right to expect. That was one of the strange things of the last part of the 20th century. How it will go now in the 21st century, we will have to wait and see. Given the world situation, we can expect genetic engineering will be used for both good and evil. This will surely include human cloning unless it backfires terribly. Whether we will get anything like we see in the later episodes of Star Wars, we will have to wait and see. What should we do? Well, we're Christians. We're trying to follow the Bible. We're trying to live according to its precepts. We should act as Christians are supposed to, whatever the situation. Jesus tells us that we as Christians should be like salt. What does salt do? Well, salt makes things taste better, proper amounts. Huh? Salt is a preservative. Salt creates a thirst. Salt stings when it gets into wounds. And there are ways then in which Christians should function to make the society in which we're living a more pleasant society to live in, to help to preserve it from disaster, to cause people to thirst for God, and to act in such a way that our presence and behavior stings to people who want to live their own lives and go their own way. The other picture which Jesus uses is Christians are light. And he uses two ideas there. Light at a distance is visible. It shows up in a dark place. And light nearby is illuminating. It lights up the area around it. And Christians should be both those things. Our lifestyle should be such that even at a distance we can make an impact. I think we see some of that in Christendom has been, what the United States has been in the 20th century, that features of Christianity in our society have drawn people from all over the world to want to come here, if you like, because things have gone better in our society where there's been less corruption and where people have some reason to believe that they can live in safety on their own property and such. On the other hand, just as light is illuminating to things nearby, being around a Christian closely can show up things in our lives that we might not want to be seen, and that can produce a negative effect as well. Well, we as Christians should act as salt and light in whatever situation we are in. We should obey God's commands ourselves, and we should encourage other people to righteousness as best we can. We should pray that God will be glorified and Jesus lifted up in whatever situation God puts us in. And all these things apply to our contacts with genetic engineering and cloning as well. What this means? Well, you remember what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount? Seek first God's rule and God's righteousness. And all these other things he's been talking about, food and clothing, etc., will be yours as well. We need to put God's rule and God's righteousness as first priority, and let the other things take their secondary place. We may have to take unpopular stands. Christians have been doing that throughout the ages, and should continue to do that as well. Doesn't mean that everything Christians have done or said has been the best, but there have been places where we have been unpopular in our society and where we have done the right thing. Don't let short-term benefits outweigh doing what is right and compassionate. That will always be a temptation to us as believers. Genetic engineering and cloning, this is the end of the talk, but this is not the end. We're going to hear more about genetic engineering and cloning as the days go on.